A nation only goes to war with a nation which it cannot have. One of the interesting ways of freeing a country, just highly theoretical, one which possibly has been followed from time to time, is simply to free some country and say, at the same time you free them, you say you realize in freeing you that you will have to supply 5 representatives to do the work in the House of Commons. And also, you have to pay the same fare on the British railways and steamship lines as anybody else when you come to England. No more, no more of this, we'll bring you here by charity and fetch you and educate you a little bit. You, whenever you come to England, your people have to pay just like the British. Okay? You just have to pay like anybody else. You let them have the whole country. You'd have to, because by moving out, they have a feeling, even though they're slaves, that they somehow own Great Britain. And now, if they're no longer closely associated with it and can't travel all over it and, you know, have British goods and that sort of thing rather easily, they feel disenfranchised. Havingness is the solution to slavery. Havingness is the solution to labor problems. Well, everybody knows havingness is the solution to labor problems. Everybody knows this. Industrialists all know this. You know how to go with this. You get a company union going and you raise your pay and raise the income tax rate so that the pay is adjusted again. And you give them a committee meeting of some sort and let them have a say in something. That'll fix them up. Oh, will it? Look, they're dealing with people who for centuries have been disenfranchised from all kinds of havingness. They're dealing with people who not too long ago wore silver collars to tell who they belong to. And that's the tradition that labor goes back into. They're running into have-nots that are so positive that the moment that they say, have a little bit, somebody starts shooting. And you get the derangement in the social sphere whenever labor is given a break. The tradition of slavery is too strong. They know they can't have things. Now, it takes techniques powerful than any society on earth has had or has in order to solve the problem of the have-not, whether on a national or an international basis. You have to understand what havingness is. Havingness is what a fellow can have. And that's all it is. That sounds like one of these odd definitions, you know, that defines things by itself. You have to think it over for a while. But it's the clue to all havingness. Havingness is what a fellow can have. That's what havingness is. And it isn't what you think he ought to have. That's not havingness. You get the difference?
Yeah.
It's a very vast difference to so much of a difference between these two things that unless you work havingness on a preclear in a way to permit him to have what he can have, he doesn't have, and so he doesn't recover from anything. If you tell him, supposing you ran a preclear this way, you'd say, well, maybe this is, sourly, you might say, well, maybe this is one of these control processes. You know, pick up the table and dump it on his lap and say, you can have that. And pick up the couch and dump that on the table and say, you can have that. And pick up a chair and dump it on the couch and say, you can have that. And then wonder why he didn't get over it or get well or something. Now, it would require a necromancy, I'm afraid, that's beyond anyone's power to compute exactly. You could approximate it. No, you'd have to give him what he can have. And therefore, you have to let him look around the room and find something he can have. That's a very important part of it. His selectiveness is below the level of conscious thought. His ability to have is so slight that if you go to a nation like Ireland, where people had a can't-have run on them, not by this nation particularly, but by generations of Iberian rule and other rules that the Irish don't even now know about, They don't. They don't know much about their history. It's quite remarkable. We read so much about the Irish that know everything there is to know about Ireland. And I was over in Ireland for quite many months, and I kept digging and digging and digging around here and there, and I'd hold up bits and p-
pieces, you know, and I'd say to an Irishman, did you know about this? No, it wasn't in his tradition of what he should know about Ireland. For instance, they all think they got their black hair because the Spanish Armada was driven ashore on Ireland by Drake. They tell you this. That's where that came from, you know. And the big ships were pounded up there. And then there was a port out there in Galway and so on. And that's where that came from. Oh, no, they're Spanish people. I don't know how did they miss the short sail between Galway and Santander? Northern Spain sailed straight to Ireland across a sometimes foggy sea. And the way you would do this, you would sail out into the Atlantic so as to be blown up on the coast at Galway. And then somebody wonders how they got their black hair. Now, people lose these traditions when they lose havingness, because nation after nation has come along and taken the poor Irishman and booted him around and said, can't have. Actually, one of the most, slightly heartbreaking little song is Gary Owen and the Gary Owen. And they have struck for freedom, and they now have freedom, because the fellow man named Gary Owen is dead. He's the tax collector. And every Irishman can now have a cup of tea. Freedom. A cup of tea. You look over this background, and the level of can't have that has been run on the country monitors its ability to recover. Right now, Ireland's having a terrible time economically. Why? Well, if you've ever been over to Ireland, trying to audit people off the streets of Ireland, you'd understand we have an office over there right this minute. And trying to audit these people is one of the most fantastic things you, a British auditor, or an American auditor, ever attempted. Look around here and find something you can have. That question just is not real to an Irishman. He will monkey with it, fool with it, dabble with it, and you'd certainly better ask him what he's doing with it after a while, regardless of what he's saying, because he hasn't a shadow of what you're talking about. I ran a girl one day for about 25 or 30 minutes just on the first question, trying to get it clear, and finally she looked around and found some things she could have, and then I asked her exactly how she was having them, and she said, well, that's very easy. I look around and I see that, and then I realized that if I had a lot of money, I could go out and buy one, and I could have that one that I bought. Now, an auditor finds this very significant. The number of vias by which this person could have what? Please, a scrap of paper on the floor that's been wadded up and thrown away. I've asked these people, can you... You see that dirty piece of cigarette stamp that's been torn off a pack and thrown down there? Now, could you yourself have that? And they say, probably belongs to the person that tore it off. No, the return of Ireland to an economic stability, which they're not now enjoying, doesn't happen to depend on anybody subsidizing them or giving them anything. It depends on their own ability to have. And if that is not raised, then they will not recover. And what are we looking at? We're looking at peoples condemned by the past track of not have to a point where no amount of milk and beans and rice and Cadillac cars dumped on the back of their necks would ever do anything for them, except maybe resent all these obstacles that had been dropped around, that they have to walk around to get any place. Now, I would never, never, never be critical while abroad of the American State Department or the American government, because I'm abroad, you see. Never, under any circumstances. So I'm giving you the next part of this speech in America, and it's being brought to you by tape. The American Economic Relief Program, as fostered by Foster,
is not only a bungled mess at its inception, but is totally unworkable and never will be workable. To dump on the backs of the Arab peoples a bunch of Cadillac cars is the American idea of solving the Arab economic situation. Harry S. Truman had very, very good ideas on this after he got processed enough, why he started to snap and spark. The only president in history that ever went out of the White House in better shape than he went in. Thanks to Dianetics. Oh, you didn't know that. But he wouldn't run again. He got up there and gave a nice Dianetic speech to the Democratic Convention and says, go on, vote for Adlai. That was the end of the Democratic president chain in America. He knew when to get out. He got smart enough, he could even exteriorize from his job. All right. Now, what happened? What happened when this next fellow got in there? He was all right, maybe, for a while. He's a man of high principle, and so on. But he has an unfortunate, a very unfortunate weak spot. He will only listen to an authority. He detests hearing anything about anything from somebody who isn't an authority on that subject. So he surrounds himself by authorities who do his thinking for him while he goes play golf. It's grim. Because who's the authority on mental reactions in America? That's right. A philosophy that was thrown out of Germany 100 years ago as unworkable is now the mental philosophy that is used by the government in America, except in those departments which now use, smartly, Scientology. But the authority who were used on the Arab mind and that sort of thing will be some psychiatrist who just pulled out of an institution someplace, you know. They don't know anything about it. Yes, he listened to an authority. That's fine. But does he ever listen to really an authority on the Arabs? No, he listens to an authority who is an authority on authorities on the Arabs, who himself has not been so far away that he's been forgotten. And so, we get these totally unreal programs. Let's give $420 million worth of economic aid to the Arabs, and that'll all square everything up and so forth. Harry Truman could have given them some agriculture and a few things like that, and he meant to. But now it's just, let's dump some Cadillac cars on the back of their heads. That'll make everybody happy, and then we can pick up the Suez. At last, of course, being broadcast from America, and it's not foreign conception. This program can't win. Man has reached a dreadful impasse in this world. Very soon he will realize that you do not dare set anybody free. Only in this century has he been really experimenting thoughtfully with freedom. He experimented 2 centuries, getting on 2 centuries ago, over in France with freedom, and he had a convulsion which wiped out nearly all of his havingness across the top, because he tried to turn over to the not-haves all the havingness of the country with the Republic. And France went up in smoke and has probably never again regained anything like its economic stability that it had before that time. The French Revolution was a chaos. It was a convulsion and is used as a horrible example of what you must not do if you are ruling the world. You mustn't give people this broadly their freedom because you get kicked in the teeth. And the world is liable to learn this terrible lesson. It's possible it's already learned it, is you don't dare set men free. A fellow by the name of Hershey that makes the milk chocolates is a good example of this. He tried to give his workmen in America the first parks and separate built homes and first dwellings that were at all fit to look at. Recreation grounds, playgrounds. He tried to give them all these things. He was a very advanced industrialist. He had a min of money. His factories were a model of workability. And about the time he'd set them all free from their economic restraints, we have the picture, the rather pathetic one, of Hershey himself standing on the top of one of his factories, which was surrounded by all these model homes in all directions, and mobs of screaming workers shouting for his blood and firing at him with small arms. I guess they educated him not to set anybody free, didn't they? Well, this all breaks down to that. What is this thing called havingness? It's what people can have. And if you load them up with what they can't, they will fire back. I imagine you'd get quite a revolution if you dumped an awful lot of coal in the city streets of a nation that doesn't use it. And so it is mentally to these people. When you set them free, what are you doing? You're going to give them something, is that right, that they haven't had before? You can say, well, you're going to give them political principles, you're going to give them democratic rule, you're going to give them self-election. They don't know anything about this. But you're going to give them something. They're going to have something that they didn't have before. They're going to have their own government or someone. What's a South American's idea of government? Bang, 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 bang. See? Government is a chance to shoot the last president. Now, when you have to have something that's absolutely vital and that's been denied, after a while you don't even have to have it. So the process of denial works out to a process of no possession, to a process of impossible to possess, which goes down to, if it comes my way, I'll kill it, wreck it, destroy it. You see how this works? So if we try to give somebody a country that they haven't been permitted to have, their next action and reaction is to destroy it. And so they do. Filipinos are very good, very advanced people, very fine people. I had a lot of friends out there when I was a kid. But a wild thing happened the first time that the United States Navy ever gave them a destroyer to manage all by themselves. That was about the grimmest thing. They didn't even give them an officer or a motor mac to, or a machinist mate to go along with it, because the Filipinos didn't want one. And all the brass in the engine room was brightly polished. They could have that, brightly polished brass. You just never saw so many yards of beautiful polished brass as appeared in that destroyer. They scraped the paint off everything that was painted that could be made bright. But there were no tubes left in the boilers, no firing mechanisms left in the breeches of the guns, no bilge pump in working condition. Nothing aboard that thing that could run was left in a running condition. And the destroyer was beautiful as it sat at anchor in a shallow part of Manila Bay, so that its bottom, resting on the mud, could keep it afloat. But it wouldn't run. And yet some politician had always been saying, we want our own Navy. And somebody complied, but they don't have a Navy. Do you see what happens? They destroyed it covertly. Covert destruction. That doesn't mean that Filipinos would always do this, but it certainly means the Filipino had been denied this type of machinery long enough so that when he finally did get it, he couldn't have it. But he could have some bright brass. He himself makes bright ornaments. Do you see this? So what is the world going to do in the face of atomic fission, in the face of new democratic principles, of new ideologies, and all this sort of thing? What is it really going to do? Is it going to just convulse and flash back in the face of everybody who tries to do anything for it? Or is it going to somehow or other bungle through in spite of radiation, atmosphere? Or is it going to fall flat on its face and not go any further? Is it going to die with a whimper or a bang? Because a polluted atmosphere, polluted with radiation, could make the world die with a whimper. Without a bomb ever being dropped in anger, we could all be wiped out by enough radiation accumulating in the atmosphere. We'd just get sicker and sicker, and after a while we'd be so sick that nobody could do anything for anybody else, and that'd be the end of the civilization. Or bang, somebody drops a bunch of bombs, somebody else drops a bunch of bombs, and there's now so many bombs dropped that nobody can live either, whether we was hit by the target or not. This sort of thing lies in the future. It's enforced havingness. It's a havingness we cannot have. We obviously cannot have these things. Has atomic radiation ever been political? Oh, yes, I dare say for the history of this universe, atomic radiation has been political in its connotation. It has been used as a control mechanism since the end of time, beginning of time. And
as a person can't have control, atomic radiation is used as a control mechanism. Those people who can't have, tolerate, or give control are therefore susceptible to radiation. And because people have seen planets destroyed and things destroyed, they're thinking in terms of planets being destroyed right now. Their havingness on the subject of the planet would have to be pretty good before they'd start worrying about losing it. They're not worried about losing it right now, but they could be worried to a point where they could only destroy it. Their havingness on their fellow men would have to be rehabilitated because atomic energy makes an only one out of each of us. Brahmanism was probably the remnants of some old atomic attack in the old days or some disease. You know how only one that is. Every man cooks his own fire, uses his own utensils, cooks his own food. It's quite interesting. You could look forward to something like that in other societies if radiation kept up. But it runs a no-have on us all. And that's the point. It's saying you can't have this planet. It's saying this planet is going to get so polluted and contaminated that you, in the state that you're in, will not be able to tolerate and support your own beingness here. Therefore, you cannot have this planet or this civilization. And if people are driven too far down on that scale, they eventually respond and try to destroy that thing which they cannot have. And just the presence of atomic radiation for no other cause is inviting disaster and destruction on the part of the peoples of the world greater than ever before. But it'll also tend to make slaves out of every person on earth, because slaves are made with no have. And nations and governments thrusting this idea of the atom bomb down the throats of populations may be working merely reactively. They probably are not thinking about this at all. But what does it say? It says you can't have earth anymore. You can't have earth anymore, but you're here. That means you're a slave. What are we facing? A future where we get all our brains wired up and somebody presses a switchboard somewhere and we then shovel some wood and hew some water? Well, that's the direction this is going. It says, go out of communication with none another people because you're poison to each other somehow. It says, we are controlling you so badly and so absolutely and so never returnably that you must be depressed into a slavery status deeper and lower than any slave has ever been depressed on earth. And it's saying you can't have this planet, you can't have your homes, your family, you can't have anything else. And you'll never be able to have these things again. And whether you like it or not, you're at the make and break point of the human race. But there is one thing which reestablishes an individual's ability to have. There's one thing that can change his mind on this subject. Whether in groups, whether he's individually being addressed or not. Even a catatonic schizophrenic today could be audited by Scientology with success. We no longer have to have a man's consent to audit him. We no longer have to worry about whether or not he said yes before we started the session, because we can get him up to a point where he'll eventually find out what we're doing, find the auditor, and say yes. We can only do this because we're not making slaves. We're freeing men the only way they can be freed. Improve their ability to have, improve their ability to do, and grant them once more the power to be. And if we can do these things, and if we do them, perhaps there's some hope for this race. But if we don't do them, there's nothing there, as far as I can see, but an end of track. I'm not backing up the hearse. I'm really not. But if a person knows something, the only unfriendly thing he can do, if he knows something somebody else should know, the only unfriendly thing he can do is not to speak. And so I am speaking to you today. Not to try to frighten you, because that is the main trouble with the bomb. It frightens people. I'm not asking you to worry about the atomic bomb or radiation in any way. I'm merely asking you to look it over on the problem of processing, of livingness, and decide whether or not you and we can do something about it in a practical way. We're not talking in favor of revolution. We're talking in favor of evolution. For the first time, when atomics hit a planet, maybe one can survive. And that would have broken a cycle of action that's evidently been going on for some time. Therefore, what we are talking about here in this Congress has an intense practicality. It's not, perhaps, to others a very important subject, but the subject is just whether or not we, us, will live through it. And I think the answers are rather in favor of our doing so. And I hope you think so, too. Thank you.